I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. R.J. Palacio is the author of Pony. She's also the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Wonder, which has sold over 12 million copies worldwide. If you haven't read Wonder, you have to go do that. I mean, Pony's also amazing, but Wonder was, like, insane. The book's message inspired the Choose Kind movement and has been embraced by readers around the world, with the book published in over 50 languages. Wonder was made into a blockbuster movie starring Julia Roberts, Owen Wilson, and Jacob Tremblay. Palacio's other best-selling books include 365 Days of Wonder, Mr. Brown's Book of Precepts, Augie and Me, Three Wonder Stories, the picture book We're All Wonders, and the graphic novel White Bird, which is currently being filmed as a major motion picture starring Gillian Anderson and Helen Mirren. Palacio lives in Brooklyn with her husband, two sons, and two dogs. Welcome, Raquel. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Pony.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited.
I loved this book. I read it like start to finish. It was so immersive. I got chills. I was like near tears at many points. And then after I read the entire thing, I went online and watched the trailer after your comments at the end. And I was like, oh, what trailer? So then I played it and I was like, oh my God. And then I emailed your publicist and I was like, that was so emotional.
Thank you so much. It means so much to you know, it's the first thing I've kind of written outside of the Wonder World. So I'm nervous. Aww. I'm really nervous about what people's reactions will be. So thank you. It means a lot.
So when I heard what it was about, and maybe you can tell listeners the sort of elevator pitch of it, I feel like it didn't, like, I mean, I guess it never really does justice to the book. Do you know what I mean? Like, the plot itself is just one tiny piece, because I feel like this book was really, well, you tell them what it's about, but I just feel like it's about, like, life and death and family and, like, you know, all of it. So anyway.
Yeah, it I'm so glad you're saying that, because it is. Okay, so on the premise, it's very linear narrative, very kind of straightforward, about a 12-year-old boy who lives kind of alone in the middle of nowhere with his dad and his only friend, really, who is a ghost companion that he's had since as long as he could remember. And the book opens with some armed men. Again, this takes place in the 1850s in the sort of the American frontier, sort of a vast unknown territory full of pockets of true wilderness and wildness and all of that. And so these three armed men come in the middle of the night for his dad. They take him away, and Silas, the boy, is left alone and terrified. And when the horse one of the men had been sort of leading shows up again in the morning, Silas takes that as a sign from the universe, kind of, that he actually has to go and save his dad, that his dad needs him and he has to go on this journey. So on the surface, it's a very kind of straightforward quest journey, you know, sort of boy goes out and has a specific agenda. You know, I'm going to save my dad, and I have a horse and I have a companion, you know, kind of, again, classic hero's journey stuff. But I did also want to really touch on bigger themes about death and love and connections, the connections that tie us together as human beings. But I didn't want to do it in a heavy-handed way. So when I have people who are like great readers like you, sort of like actually make those connections without us having to like say, it's a book about big themes, like, boing, you know, it's so great. So I'm thrilled.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, it just resonated. There was so much. I found myself wondering, like, if you as the author, sort of, if it had been inspired by loss, or I know you wrote it during the pandemic, or that you had thrown out like most of the book and started over from scratch, which is just, I'm so sorry, but that's amazing that you had to do that. And I'm sorry you had to go through it to get to this point. But, you know, all of this, I'll just like read a quote or like this one, for instance. You said, "I can't tell you what some ghosts know or don't," he replied softly. "Death is different for everyone, just like life is. People see the world they believe in, and you see the world they believe in. I know it's not easy for you." And then there was another one that says, "It's always been a wonder to me and always will be to see something invisible be made visible. Slowly, magically, the negative of the moon took form on the glass plate inside the bath." But I feel like that was actually much more than the photograph. It's like the theme of the whole book in a way.
Yep, exactly. The correlation between photography and because the book takes place in the early days of photography as a science, and new discoveries were being made all the time. But I mean, I still find myself as a fan of photography. I mean, I took photography, I went to art school. So it's like, you know, foundation year photography. And I have always just found it fascinating, even though I understand a little bit the chemical science behind it. Still, the idea of taking this invisible image, placing it in a bath of some sort of solution, and then having a latent image appear is kind of miraculous. And in that way, so there is a correlation between, or a metaphor between, this idea that how in photography, the invisible does become visible through the action of sunlight and some chemicals, but in a way, death can be like that too. I mean, there are, you know, there's so much that is invisible in this world, and things that we don't understand. Doesn't mean they're not there. It just means, you know, we don't see them. We don't have whatever we need, you know, and Silas is a boy who can see ghosts. He can see, he has, for whatever reasons, a connection to that other world, which you can either believe in or not. And that's totally fine. But it's a fun world to delve into a little bit. And so, yes, I started writing this book many years ago. It was sort of around the time that my own dad was dying. He was old. He was an old man though. And you know, it's that comes with its own sadnesses and all of that, but it's not like I was a child. I just want to make that clear. But my mother had passed away almost 20 years ago. And, you know, I'm sure everyone who is lucky enough to have great parents can sort of identify with this idea. That's sort of the big fear in our lives when we're little, right? That something would happen to our parents. And it was something that I was a very anxious kid when it came to that stuff. And I thought about a lot. And then suddenly, you know, I find myself in my 50s facing that sense of like, oh my goodness, they're gone and I'm okay. And the world goes on. And, you know, I don't know. I was just thinking a lot about those connections, how it's really the love. Right. It just doesn't go away. And that connection is always there. Even if, you know, I wish I could still speak and hear them. I wish I were Silas. But so that was on my mind. And like I said, like you said, I had started this novel, but it was, you know, I was 400 pages into it, 2 years into writing it. And I was probably not even a third of the way through because there was so much in there, you know, and I realized it was, I didn't want to write one of these giant, big epics, you know, that would have been 1200 pages easily by the end. I wanted to write a really quick epic. So I knew I was just, you know, sometimes you just have to not only course correct, but you just have to like, okay, this is just not working. So I threw it out literally because I had to. And didn't, you know, went on to other things, didn't think about it. And then, but, you know, the book and the characters kept coming back to me over the years in bits and pieces, but I never could figure out sort of how to make this quick epic of it. And then for some reason during the lockdown, I just sat down one day and it was like, it was ready. It had baked. It was fully baked and it was just ready to come out. And the story just kind of like literally just, it was like one of the most glorious writing experiences I've ever had. Cause it just like flew, like every day I'd sit down and I knew where I was going. And it was a lot of fun to write. So yeah, that was that story.
Wow. Well, I feel like you can tell that in the reading, right? It, you know, like the pacing and the reading and it's just like, all keeps going so effortlessly, I guess. Yeah. I mean, what you were saying about your parents, by the way, I mean, you are an orphan at any age, right? Orphanhood,
exactly.
Like in your 50s, it doesn't matter. It's still you. It's still your parents. It's still that feeling of who is looking out in the world, right? Like it's a sensation that I think you captured it so well with Silas, but.
Well, because his mom, you know, is from the very beginning, she died in childbirth. So he's always living with her still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interestingly with him, there was one scene where I think it was, I'm forgetting who he was talking to, but when the souls that you can see, mm-hmm. he has this realization, like maybe they don't know that they're gone. Right. Like mm-hmm. maybe they don't know, like, what if they think that they're still with us? Or what if these, you know, some souls sort of stay longer and some don't. And I don't know, I totally like, maybe not to the extent of Silas, but I do believe in like mediums and that who knows what happens. Like I've had a really powerful couple medium experiences. So I feel like once you've had those, it's hard to go back. Right.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll believe it.
There's
now.
Something there. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, how did you know that?
Right. Oh, and even if there's no explanation for it, it sort of doesn't, it doesn't deny the fact that these realities possibly could exist. I mean, that, you know, that they knew something that they had no reason to know. So something's up there. Yeah. And I can't explain it. But yeah, I did want to sort of, I really had a sense, or I have a sense that, you know, just like people, you know, this, we're human beings, you know, we're verbs, we're, you know, it's always a process and a journey being alive. And I don't think that it just makes no sense for that suddenly to stop, as if the idea that whatever souls that we are suddenly know everything, you know, okay, you die and suddenly you're all knowing. No, you're still the same person you were, but maybe a little, you know, I don't know. But that's kind of what I wanted to capture. It's sort of the sense that there are mysteries that we'll just never really be able to wrap our heads around, but we can accept them and live with them and welcome them and love them and kind of make the world wondrous, you know, and okay.
I mean, I feel like that provides so much comfort for me. I don't know.
Me too.
That? So, you know, I've had conversations with myself like, well, it probably isn't true, but it's making me feel better now. But am I just fooling myself? And is it worth fooling myself if I feel better? So,
yeah. Have you been in my head? Because that's exactly, you're like totally describing everything I've ever felt. And then I realized there's a point where whether you, it's not a question of whether you believe or whether you want to believe, but they're both fine.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, yeah. Why not?
Exactly. Okay. It does, yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Well, more to the literary side. So you had a lot of references, I felt like, to this whole like Ulysses Telemachus sort of journey. Was that in part like the format you wanted to encapsulate in this journey with the sort of the way, not the wayfinders, but you know, that the people as they,
Absolutely. And that was sort of how I wanted the book to be in the beginning, again, 8 years ago, whenever it was that I threw out those pages, because I always had wanted to just write a very linear journey, like, you know, from point A to point J, and then just have things happen along the way, and then use that sort of device as a way of telling a larger story. Part of the issue was just figuring out how to do that in a way that doesn't feel too cumbersome or too descriptive. You know, I did a lot of research for the book and I end up falling, you know, I love old things and end up falling in love with the things that you find out. And then I would put too much description in there and there was a point where I knew like the railroad schedules of trains on the Erie Canal leading. I mean, like I knew so much. It was crazy. And I needed to just kind of walk away from all the research and just let it kind of settle and then pick it up when it was at a point where I remembered what I needed to remember and I forgot what I never needed to know. Mm-hmm. So, and that's exactly what kind of came out. So it was good. I'm glad I waited.
I'm glad you waited too. And the ending, which I won't give away in any way. And part of it, I had maybe an inkling, but then other parts, not at all. Did you know where it was all headed? Like, did you know all those big pieces from the start?
I knew that I had certain landmarks I wanted to hit, okay. You know? And that was kind of the fun part about like writing it, when all of a sudden it's like, you know, you want this there, you know, bits and pieces, but how to get there exactly still has to work itself out. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, it's like finding a little jigsaw puzzle. And it's like, yes, this will, and then it just kind of works itself out. So at least with me, I didn't have any kind of firm outline. I just knew where I was going and what I wanted to hit. And there's only one point, I can't go into it, where I flinched in my first draft because I just, it's heartbreaking. Things are heartbreaking. And you kind of like, oh, maybe this person doesn't have to cross over, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember that was the only time I came downstairs. I had dinner with my family because we were in lockdown. So they would hear about my progress on the book. And I'm like, it was the first and only time during this sort of process of writing that I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go. He has to die. Whoever it was. And that was heartbreaking because, you know, you do feel, you know, when you're writing, you do have the power of life and death. You know, like you can decide who lives, who dies. And so, but in terms of the journey, that person was always meant to leave. And yeah, and it was heartbreaking. Oh, but because I fall in love. I mean, these characters have lived with me for a long time and they really haven't changed over the course of the years. So it was fun getting them out on paper too. It was nice sort of introducing, letting the world meet them too. That's always a nice journey as well.
Wow.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Amazing. Well, I mean, well done with, I mean, some of the things. I just got chills. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, so I won't ruin anything, but really, yeah. Really amazing. Very cool.
Like, for instance, I always knew the violin would.
You did?
Feature.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about the shoe and everything?
From the beginning.
Okay.
Did you ever watch Dr. Zhivago?
No. I may have, but if I did, it was so long ago. I feel like I watched it as a kid. It came out forever ago, right?
And it's one of those, like, it has an intermission. It's like super long.
Yeah, I think I watched it with
my mom. There's a whole Bela Lyka thing in there. Okay. I've always loved that. So the Bela Lyka is kind of a key to some, whatever.
Okay.
And that just always stuck with me. So.
Wow. I should probably watch that again. Next time I find six free hours to, watch Dr. Zhivago. Okay, maybe not. And the song, that the refrain, and then to hear it in the trailer, I mean, honestly, that's like, doesn't it make you cry? Like, does that have personal relevance to you? Like, how did you come up?
Well, yes. In a way, it was that song, I think, that finally freed the story, weirdly enough, with Wonder. You know, I'd had this incident with I've told the story so many times, but the child in the ice cream store who had a facial difference. But it was hearing Natalie Merchant's song Wonder that kind of like, I don't know. It just kind of like, it really, it's weird. It just like kind of made it like, oh my goodness, I'm going to write a book. It's going to be called Wonder. It's going to be about this. And all along, with Pony, it's like, I wanted that song to come to me, and I didn't have the song. And then during lockdown, I was I just had a lot of time on my hands, and I found myself like on a website listening to, 16th century ballads or folk ballads. And that song came, and I saw it, and I read the lyrics, and I was like, oh my goodness. And then I started researching the song, and it was hard. There have been some renditions of it that aren't necessarily my cup of tea, but the chord arrangements were there, and I play guitar, and I started like coming up with, anyway, it was great. And so my sons are in it. My older son sings and my younger son plays guitar. So it was also our COVID project. It was so much fun because first we had to practice. Not that they weren't busy, by the way, they were super busy, but they gave me enough time to be able to sort of learn the song and practice. And then I reached out to Molly Fletcher, who is an incredible violinist. My husband had worked with her before, and she helped arrange the violin solo and a recording studio, and then we did the music video, and it was so much fun to film that. And I got the costumes, and it was just great. It was and no one was in Prospect Park. We could shoot where we did.
Wow.
Saturday morning, It was great.
How did you get it all old-fashioned looking?
Those are just apps.
Wow.
You just yeah, we did it with our phones. So my husband,
oh my gosh,
my son's girlfriend, Rebecca, and I were just like, okay, there you go. And
that's
we
amazing.
Had like, you know, so yeah, it was thank you. I really appreciate it because that was so much fun.
Wow. That's amazing. And so personal and everything. Wow. Did you think about not calling this book Pony? I mean, not that I don't love the title, and it's a great title, it's a great cover. And
no, 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 you cannot like it. I'm
not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying, I'm wondering what those discussions were like when the title was
it was always Pony for me, even when it was 400 pages, it was always Pony. Because that's what I always thought about it. My publisher from the very beginning is like, oh, we don't love we don't love it. And my sons were like, oh, Pony. I don't think I would read that book. Like Pony is like, you know, My Little Pony. It's just kind of whatever. I'm like, okay. So I tried other titles. It was This Bright Land for a while. I had other titles. They all just felt wrong to me in the end. And, you know, I vacillated again when I turned in the manuscript and, you know, you get your first read from the publishers and everyone weighs in. That was the only thing that everyone said, but by then I was really wed to it. And I knew also what the cover would look like because I designed the cover because that was my background. I was a jacket designer. So I kind of knew how I wanted it to look. So by then it was just too late. It was like, I'm sorry, it's Pony. Forgive me, but that's what it is in my head. And I think it's what it has to be at this point. So,
I think it's too late to change it now.
It's too late to change it now.
No, I'm kidding. It's great. It's a strong title. Yeah.
It can be anything. But titles are very strange. And I think as an author, just like when you name someone, a character, something, it's really hard to change the name later on. Like if you suddenly, for whatever reason, have to change, it's like, okay, that's not the same person, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So are you working on anything new? Like what's after this one?
You know, it's funny you should say, because last time I took so long to get from Wonder and Whitebird to Pony. I actually started, I was on vacation and I thought, oh, you know what, I'm just going to start my next one. I don't want to go too into it, but I think I haven't like officially started, but I've started like thinking about it. I mean, and putting words and thoughts down. So yeah, I want to just keep doing it. I like writing. It's fun when it goes well. It's really great. You know, and when it's hard, it's hard, but let's hope this one goes as well as Pony did. I really enjoyed the experience of writing that one. I had enjoyed Wonder as well. So, you know, but Wonder was more, you know, cause I was working a 9-to-5 job. So I used to write in the middle of the night. I used to get up from 12 to 3 and I did that. Yeah. My kids were younger then. So that was the only quiet time of day. You would know,
I get
right?
It.
You have
I get
four.
It. I was finishing this book at 4:30 this morning because I was like, you know, I mean, I'm like, come on, nobody's going to be awake. And then of course I hear footsteps like an hour later. I'm like,
you know. Right. And I can only with four kids. How old are your kids again? Like what range?
6 and 8. And then I have 14-year-old twins. So.
Oh my goodness. So COVID, wow. Kudos to you.
My daughter has COVID right now, one of them. So
oh, no.
I know.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm so
it's
sorry.
Fine. She's not sick. So I'm like, it's fine. But
yeah.
You know, it's always something. It's just always something. But that's okay. They bring lots of joy.
Yeah.
It's like you feel like with writing. I'm like, all right, I'll keep doing it. Because, you know, a lot of times it's great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I always, for the younger kids, it's been especially, I mean, not that it hasn't been hard for the older kids. My 17-year-old's done really well, but still, it was a long time to be locked in with your parents. So it's tough.
There's no great age. There was no age where you're like,
no,
you know, this age. No,
yeah.
There's no good age.
Actually, I have to say my older son, who's 24, came back to live with us for the year. And he hadn't lived with us since before college. That was kind of cool.
Okay. All right.
That was a good age. Yeah. I didn't mind, you know, getting a whole other extra year of having him around. So that was nice.
Well, better for parents. I feel like it was a joy for a lot of parents. I'm just saying for the kids.
Yeah. Oh, for the kids. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Is Pony going to be a movie? It must be, right?
You know, either a movie or possibly, I mean, I've already had several talks. The movie seems like a natural, right? But I kind of think it would make a really great bingey, streamy kind of series, just because, yeah. You know how Lost had the sort of the, you know, you have the main narrative, but then you can actually have the backstories mm-hmm. of all these characters. And because, you know, all of these characters exist in my head, they're small and minor characters. I mean, the character of Pa mm-hmm. in a movie mm-hmm. would actually be a minor role, because he doesn't actually have a lot of airtime. Whereas in the series, Pa has an incredible backstory starting in Scotland, right. and then an incredible love story with Silas's mother, a poor man and a rich girl, 1850s Philadelphia society. I mean, it's a really beautiful story that isn't actually told, but just kind of hinted at yeah. in Pony. But in a kind of a series thing, I think really could be told. And then it would all tie in at the end. And so I'm thinking 10 episodes is really what we would need to really tell the story. So that, I think, is the question, like whether or not it would be better served as a movie or as maybe a...
I like it. Yeah.
That's harder to get off the ground, I believe, these days. So
I'm sure you'll be okay either way, getting it off the ground.
We shall see. We shall see.
But it's very, yeah. Off the, like you could say, I don't know. It has such universal appeal. It doesn't matter like what era it's in. It's like so engrossing. Like it's just, you're just going to make it better. Anyway, I'm rambling.
I love hearing this. Honestly, you have no idea. It's music to my ears for many reasons, but mostly because, as I said, it's so different from Wonder. And I know that when I love an author and I love a book, I kind of want them to write the same book over and over again. And I was really afraid of disappointing people. So the idea that, you know, the response I'm getting is that people are not, they're not being disappointed. So I'm really thrilled.
No, I think it's great when authors try new things. Who did I talk to? There was, oh, gosh, I'm starting to lose my mind in my old age of podcasting here. Paula McLean, who had written historical fiction and then wrote mm-hmm. All the Stars or something. Anyway, which was more of a thriller, psychological mystery. Anyway, she was so worried when we had our conversation, like that she was shifting genres. And I was like, I don't think you should be this worried. Like, Jerry, like it's going to be a good book and readers just really want a great book. So I don't
That's
know.
True.
And it turned out
that's
it was true, like a bestseller. And anyway, it all works
that's
out.
That's it. I think what happens is between the writer and the reader, there's all these in-betweens. Yeah. There's the booksellers
yes,
and then
I
there's
know.
The publishers and then there's the pub, you know, there's yeah. a whole lot, you know. So if you're lucky enough as a writer to connect directly with the reader,
yes.
despite all the genres, you know, there's what shelf you end up in a bookstore. I mean, there's so much rigmarole.
I know, but readers are, I think people don't give enough credit to readers, honestly. I mean,
I think you're absolutely right.
So anyway, speaking of, okay, so what advice would you have for aspiring authors? And then I'll leave you alone, I promise.
No, not at all. This has been wonderful. I could talk to you every day. I would say, you know, I was about to say something that I've told people, but I don't follow it. So now I'm not sure it's true. I was about to say, continue without fail to write something every day. Because I really was told that that is what you're supposed to do. Just even if, you know, it's not for a book, whatever, just even if it's journaling, whatever it is, write it, you know, get it down. But I'm not entirely sure I have to admit that I don't write every day. And I write when I have something to write. So I don't want to give advice that I'm not sticking to. So I guess I would say, I think reading is just as important as writing. Oh, like every time I read something new, and if it's good, you kind of, it goes into some sort of little piece of your brain, and you don't even realize later on when you're writing that you're activating your little homages. No one else might see them, but you know, whether it's a violin, because I remembered loving Dr. Zhivago as a kid and there was a Bella Lyca in there that kind of factors into things, or whether it's, I mean, here I'm talking about movies and I should be talking about books, but The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, which is a movie I referenced in Wonder, and if you watch it again, actually Phoebe might like that one.
Okay.
You know, it's a Rex Harrison, Gene Tierney, whatever, but there's a ghost in it. And I didn't even realize that, there, you know, there are things that are coming up from that, which I remember seeing when I was a kid with my mom. And with books all the time, I feel like they're little, you know, you there are books that I've read that aren't even that great, but there might be an incredible sort of scene or a moment or something that you kind of remember, you absorb, and then manifests itself or sparks something in your own writing later on. So I would say just, you know, if you want to be a writer, you read everything all the time and read with passion. And, you know, it's so easy to be distracted nowadays. I know I was just on vacation and I had my little stack of books, but I also had my phone. It's just so much easier sometimes to scroll, but you just have to put the phone away and then just start a book and love it. And that's it.
That's great advice, particularly with the phone. Yes.
Yeah. Put the phone away.
Put the phone away. I know.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Easier said than done. Exactly.
Well, Raquel, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for all you do. And that was just a really immersive experience for me. So I felt, I love feeling moved. I just love it. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you. I so appreciate it. And you have absolutely no idea how much your words really are impacting me. I'm going to go and cry in a little while, but thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. No, it means so much to me. It really does. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.